Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome, everybody, to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan. Today, we're going to feature one of Jack Webb's masterpieces, Dragnet. And the show is called The Big Cast, and it's from 1951. Following that, it's the Dennis Day Show. Those of you who have listened to the Jack Benny Show know that his kid singer, Dennis Day, is a bit of a comedian, and he will prove it today on his own program from 1947. But right now, here's Dragnet from July 2nd, 1951.
Liggett & Myers, makers of Fatima cigarettes, is proud to bring you its prize-winning radio program, winner of the Motion Picture Herald Fame Award. The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. 12 men drop completely from sight over a short period of time. There's evidence of foul play. 4 months pass. You finally locate the leading suspect in the case. Your job? Pick him up.
You'll be amazed when you compare Fatima with other long cigarettes. You'll find they now cost the same. But in Fatima, the difference is quality. You see, Fatima is the quality king-size cigarette because it contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended. And Fatima is extra mild with a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. So compare Fatima yourself. Fatimas now cost the same as other long cigarettes, but your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima... the difference is quality. Ask your dealer for Fatima, the quality king-size cigarette. Best of all long cigarettes. Start enjoying Fatima tomorrow.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, October the 6th. It was sultry in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 10:45 a.m. when we got to Ortega Street, number 1285.
Second floor?
Yeah, room 14.
They all smell the same, don't they?
What's that?
Room and housing.
Oh, yeah. No, these are the odd numbers here. Must be down that way, huh?
Here it is. 14.
Yeah. Just a minute.
Taking his time.
Try it again, huh?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah? Police officers. Your name, Henry Ross?
Get out of here! Get out!
All right, come on.
What is this? What do you want?
Ben.
Yeah. I got him.
What is this? You guys really cops?
All right, come on, get up.
No fooling. No fooling. You really cops? I thought you were faking.
We showed you our identification at the door.
I thought you were faking. That's true. There's a couple of guys out to muss me up. I thought you were them.
Is your name Henry Ross?
Yeah, that's right. I thought you were one of those moochers I had a fight with in the bar the other night. Said he's going to get a pal and come back in and take care of me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I got no reason to fight with cops. I didn't do my room any good. Landlady's sure going to scream.
All right, come on. You want to finish up dressing? I want to talk to you downtown.
What's it about, officer?
Missing person. We'll brief him when we get downtown.
Well, that's all right with me. Would you take these handcuffs off, please? It's kind of hard dressing with them.
All you have to do is put your shoes on. You can make out.
All right. I don't know why you had to slap handcuffs on me. I didn't know you were cops.
You mind if we check through your things, Rolf?
Huh? Why?
You mind?
Oh, go ahead if you want. I got a knife. You know, if you'd spoke up at the door, that wouldn't have been a fight. I thought you were that mooch in a bar and his friend. I thought you were looking for trouble.
You about ready to go?
Yeah, I'd like to brush my teeth off, you don't mind. I got a real mouthful of cotton this morning.
All right, where do you keep your toothbrush?
It's over here. I'll get it.
No, I'll get it. Never mind. Get here.
Yeah, first shelf. It's in the glass.
Yeah,
don't you
it.
Trust me?
Here you go. Want some toothpaste?
Yeah.
All
nice.
Right. There you are.
Turn on the water tap, huh? Hey.
Nothing, Joe. It's pretty clean.
Of course I'm clean. What do you expect? Anybody could have made the mistake. I didn't know you were cops.
Henry Ellsworth Ross. Is that your full name?
Yeah, that's right. I hardly ever use the Ellsworth, though. It's a real lousy name, huh? Well, what's the fetch on all this, officer?
We told you. Missing person. Want to talk to you about it.
I don't think I can help you. Nobody I know is missing.
How about Paul Davis?
Davis? Yeah, I know Davis. I don't know if his name is Paul, though. Been gone a long time, huh, Miss Davis?
Yeah, that's right.
Something wrong, you think?
We figure murder. After going over his room thoroughly, we took Henry Ellsworth Ross back to the city hall to the interrogation room. He was a slightly built man, dark hair, brown eyes, swarthy complexion. He was a longshoreman by trade. Among his friends and acquaintances, he was known as a heavy drinker and a man with a violent temper. Ben and I questioned him for a half an hour and got nowhere. He sat across the table, relaxed, scraping at a thick callus on his hand with his fingernail.
I'll tell you the truth. I just don't know what you're getting at. I think I know a guy named Davis, and that's about as far as it goes.
Sure that's all you got to tell us?
Of course I'm sure. Now, look, I got a right to call a lawyer if you're going to sit there and throw a lot of charges at me.
We're not throwing charges at you, Henry. We've got a missing persons case. We'd like to have you cooperate. That's about it.
Well, maybe I'd like to, but I can't. Paul Davis is just a name to me. Maybe I know him. I don't know.
You got that report there, Ben?
Yeah, just a minute.
Here you go.
Thanks. Well, here's the way it goes, Henry.
Yeah?
According to his wife, Paul Davis left Los Angeles by auto a little over 4 months ago. He was driving up to Oakdale, California to take a job with a dairy company up there. He never got there. He's been missing ever since.
So? What's the pitch?
All we've been able to find is Davis's car, the 36 Ford Coupe, 7-TOM-792. It was sold a month ago up in Lodi, California. But Davis didn't sell it. A man by the name of Carter signed the pink slip at the time of the sale. Henry Carter.
Sorry. Don't mean anything to me.
Well, this Carter made it look like Paul Davis had signed the Ford over to him. We checked it out. Davis' signature was Ford's.
That's so? Suppose that has something to do with me?
Did you ever use the name Henry Carter?
Of course not. Ross. That's the only name I go by.
Never had your name changed?
No.
Never used an alias?
I told you, no.
I wonder if you'd mind taking a look at this. Here you go, this here.
What's this got to do with me?
The pink slip to Paul Davis' car.
Hmm.
See these signatures on the back here? Transfer of ownership? You recognize either one of them?
Paul Davis. Henry H. Carter. No? Doesn't mean anything to me. Is it supposed to?
It should, yeah.
Why?
The signatures are both in your handwriting.
How about it, Henry?
About what? I don't even know what you're talking about. You're trying to give me the treatment? What's this all about?
I'm trying to locate Paul Davis.
I'm not even sure I know the guy.
I think you better level, Henry. Our handwriting man checked both the signatures. It's your writing.
Well, then maybe you better get a new handwriting man. I never saw that slip. I never wrote those signatures. Anybody can copy handwriting.
Well, I got something else for you, Ross. I'd like to have you check it over, see if you can identify it.
What is it?
It's a letter. I want to take a look here. Does that mean anything to you?
No, nothing. I hope you're not going to tell me this is my handwriting.
That's what the report says.
Oh, it's crazy. I never wrote like that in my life.
All the writing characteristics match up, same as the signatures on the pink slip.
All right, maybe they are the same. I didn't write either one. I never wrote like that in my life. Here, let me show you how I write.
No, it's all right, Henry. Ben, do you want to pull the package tomorrow night?
Yeah, okay.
I don't savvy one bit of this, Sergeant. How about laying it out for me?
You can see the name at the bottom of the letter. It's signed Henry Carter, same as the pink slip.
Well, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, this letter was sent to the wife of Paul Davis about 9 weeks ago, and it says here that Davis supposedly was too busy to write his wife, so he had this Henry Carter send a letter. He also writes in here that Davis sold his car to Carter.
Somebody trying to cover up, huh?
Yeah, we think so. We think it's Henry Carter.
This Davis guy's been gone about 4 months?
That's right.
Well, you said you thought Davis was murdered. How come?
Just an idea. Hmm. 8 men had disappeared from around here in the last 14 months, just like Davis. Hmm. 6 more up in the San Joaquin Valley the same way. They took off alone on auto trips. They're never seen again. Not a trace.
Pretty funny.
Here you go, Joe.
Thank you. You've got your record here, Henry, from Baton Rouge. Sent to Sheriff Clemens for it.
Huh? Look, do we have to drag all out again? It's past.
Just one thing we had to check, Henry. You told us that you never use an alias, is that right?
All right, I have. I didn't know what you're getting at. I didn't figure it was any use dragging out dirty laundry again.
I asked you if you ever used the name Henry Carter.
Okay, I've used it. It's a common name. There's a lot of Henry Carters around.
We only know one if it's your description.
I'm clean, you know that.
On the smoke, Henry?
No.
Joe?
Yeah, thanks.
Well, let me have one, will you?
Sure. There you go.
Thanks.
We got a match here. You know, we rode this thing for 4 months. It's all over the state. Here.
Thanks.
I'll tell you what we got, Henry. We'll let you make up your own mind.
It's not my writing.
On June 4th, Paul Davis left Los Angeles in his car headed for Oakdale. Late in the afternoon, he stopped for gas at a service station just beyond San Fernando. The attendant says a man was with Davis. You fit that man's description, Henry.
Yeah? Well, I see monks like that in court. They get on the stand and can't even remember their own name.
A couple others. You and Davis stopped for a hamburger just outside of Gorman. There's a man there. He remembers you, too. You stopped again in Bakersfield. Picked up a quart of oil for the car. You and Davis had a Coke. It's the last time he was seen alive.
That makes me a killer, huh?
A month after that, the pink slip to Davis's car came through DMV up in Sacramento. That was for the transfer of ownership from Davis to Henry Carter, both in your handwriting. A couple of weeks later, Mrs. Davis got that letter. A month ago, Davis's car was sold to a dealer in Lodi.
Yeah, yeah.
We found the dealer, Ross. Showed him your mugshot. He says you sold him the car.
That all?
It's just the main part. There's more. We've been on the road a lot. We followed you from here to Sacramento and back, Henry. Every stop, every detour took us a long time.
Yeah, I guess it did.
What do you say, Ross?
Nothing.
Any way you want it, Henry.
You got on the smoke?
Yeah. Yeah, here you are.
Thanks.
Here.
Yeah. I guess you worked hard on it, huh? All over the state.
That's right.
Must be pretty hot up in the valley summertime. Dusty, huh?
We made out.
I've never been up in the valley in summer. It's too hot for me.
We got people who saw you there.
What's it prove? 10 people and some writing samples. You can't build a case on that. You know it, don't you?
We're going to try.
You think I murdered Davis? You, Sergeant?
Yeah?
You think I murdered those other guys, too, huh? What was it, the 10, 12 of them?
We're asking about Davis.
You think I killed him? Tell me the truth, do you? You think I murdered Davis?
Yeah, I think you did.
Uh-huh. Well, then you know as well as I do. There's only one way to prove it.
Yeah.
Find his body.
1:15 p.m. Ben and I took Henry Ross out and fed him some lunch. Then we took him back to the city hall to the interrogation room where we continued to question him. It was relaxed, and he talked a great deal about everything but the disappearance of Paul Davis. He didn't seem anxious to get away, made no demands for an attorney to represent him. For a full hour, he did most of the talking. He told us about the different homicide cases he'd read up on. He asked us about the 12 men who'd disappeared in the past months in the same manner Paul Davis had. Was there any trace of them at all? Did we have any leads? How did we think we were going to find them? Well, we finally got around to asking him if he'd submit to a lie detector test. He seemed taken by the idea and agreed to it almost immediately. Ben called Sergeant Berger and made arrangements for the test. We made up a list of key questions. At 5 p.m., we took the suspect to the third floor of the Old City Jail, where Sergeant Berger gave him the polygraph test. On the way back to the office, Ross complained he was hungry. We stopped and bought him coffee and donuts. We got back to the interrogation room a little after 6 p.m. The questioning continued. Ross didn't seem to mind at all. He kept talking. We let him talk. 8 p.m., he was still going strong.
You remember the Wilson case back in 34, don't you, Sergeant? Woman killed her whole family. Big case, you remember.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty tragic. Mm.
Is that a hobby of yours, Henry, collecting murder stories?
No, I just read them, remember. I guess I can remember every big murder case in the last 15 years.
That's so?
Yeah, it's about all of them. I guess it is kind of a hobby. I get a big kick out of it.
I get it, Ben. Excuse me, Henry.
Oh, sure.
Interrogation room, Friday. Oh, yeah, Berger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how many? Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You know, there's one thing I get a real big kick out of, those detective magazines. Mystery stories, the way they make out the murderer.
How do you mean?
You know, they always build it up into something big. Somebody's always killing somebody else for $1 million, or maybe over some woman, some beautiful woman. Same way with the movies. That's where they get it all mixed up.
I don't think I follow you, Henry.
Oh, sure you do. Every time some guy writes a murder story, he's got to build up a big reason for the killing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money, beautiful woman, revenge maybe. Always got to be a big reason. Motive, that's what they say.
Yeah, well, it generally works out that way, doesn't it?
Why? I bet you there's a 1,000 murder cases in your files without any reason at all. Some people kill, that's all. I've heard about lots of them. They just want to kill and they go ahead and do it. Maybe for a few bucks, maybe for nothing. They just do it, that's all.
That's all.
Sure, you know that. Like this thing you've been talking about. 10, 12 guys disappear. They got a few bucks, maybe they got nothing. Somebody plows them under and that's all. No big reason. They just do it. So 12 guys are gone. It doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. That's how you got it figured, huh, Henry?
Huh?
The phone call a minute ago there was a man who gave you the lie detector test.
Oh, that right? How'd it go?
He just finished going over your graph. He got 16 positive reactions.
Yeah, what's that mean?
You lied, Henry, 16 times.
That's right. You better tell him to get a new machine. I lied all the way through.
Mind telling us why?
No, I don't mind. I guess I knew you'd find out. Let's go get something to eat first, though. I'm hungry.
No, we better talk a little more, Henry.
Well, let's go. I'll tell you why we're eating. Bring a pencil with you. I'll draw you a map.
Map of what?
The canyon, where I buried him.
You are listening to Dragnet for the step-by-step solution to tonight's authentic case history. Here's step-by-step are the actual reasons why Fatima is the quality king-size cigarette. Why in Fatima? The difference is quality. Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties, extra mild and superbly blended to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma. Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories. Quality even to the appearance of the bright, clean, golden yellow package. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor. Compare Fatima yourself. Fatima's now cost the same as other long cigarettes. But your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Insist on Fatima. Start enjoying the quality king-size cigarette. Fatima, best of all long cigarettes.
Wednesday, 9:55 p.m. Ben and I took Henry Ross across the street, bought him a Coke at Mac's place, and we took him next door to the Melbourne cafeteria. It was almost closing time. Ross got himself a cottage cheese and pineapple salad, bacon and liver with onions, rye bread, banana pie, and coffee. Ben had a hot beef sandwich, mashed potatoes, and coffee. I had the same. At the back of the cafeteria, one of the busboys was mopping the tile floor. It was a strong smell of disinfectant.
How about that table over there, Sergeant? Is that all right with you?
Yeah, it's okay. Doesn't make any difference.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Want some water?
Yeah.
Henry?
Yeah, please.
All right, I'll get some.
Oh, boy, living onions. That sure smells great, huh?
Yeah. I can't take those onions so well. They repeat on me.
Not me. I can eat anything.
Salt and pepper?
Yeah, thanks. Boy, I'm sure hungry. I haven't eaten much today. Did you get a sandwich made with rye bread?
Mm-mm. Graham bread.
Oh, you should have gotten the rye. Real German rye bread. Here. Smell that. Real nice and fresh.
Here you go.
Ben?
Hello, thanks.
Oh, thank you. You know, all that talk really sharpened up my appetite. Boy, this food tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar, Joe?
Yeah, thanks.
We brought a pencil along, Henry. You want us to start taking notes?
As good a time as any, I guess. You know, the whole thing just comes right back to what I was trying to tell you there in the office.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, you know, all about those phony mystery stories.
Oh, yeah.
Every time there's trouble, there's a big reason behind it. It's phony, that's all.
Yeah?
Sure, it's Paul Davis, for instance. I guess I knew you'd find me out. I knew this morning when you picked me up, you had it figured. Must have been a big job, huh? Finding me?
Mm-hmm. Pretty big, I mean, you know. A lot of mileage. How'd it happen?
Well, there again. Just like I was saying. There's no big reason behind it. I needed a few bucks, and this Davis came along. I guess he was it. All right, pass me a ketchup, will
you? Oh, yeah. Here you are. Get the lid off there. There you go.
Thanks.
Where'd you meet Davis, Henry?
Oh, I was hitchhiking out in Ventura. Not a dime in my jeans. I was going up to Maricopa. I thought I had a job up there, and this Davis come along. Picked me up.
Mm-hmm. You ever know him before that?
No. No, a stranger. He said he's going to Oakdale. The guy give me a ride.
Go ahead.
Well, we stopped for gas at San Fernando, and I saw he had a few bucks in his wallet, and I guess that's when I got the idea.
About what?
Killing him. Mm. Now, maybe that gives you an idea what I was talking about. You don't need any big reason to kill somebody. Davis said, 18 bucks. Now, suppose I told that to a writer. Somebody killing the guy for 18 bucks. That wouldn't make much sense, huh? He'd tell you it'd never sell. You need $1 million, beautiful woman. Good motive.
Yeah. Where'd you kill him, Henry?
Just outside of Bakersfield. A little canyon there. I got Davis to buy a fifth of sherry in Bakersfield. He drank some on the way. Hey, pass the salt, huh?
Yeah. There you are.
Thanks. The liver's no good without plenty of salt.
How'd you kill Davis, Henry?
Well, that's a funny thing. He drank some of the wine, got a little sleepy. I was just outside of Bakersfield. Dark by that time. I spotted this little canyon. I figured it's as good a place as any.
Well,
so I guess him pull off to a side road and had a few more drinks. I spotted this little shack out there in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly where was this, Henry?
Well, I can show you. It's maybe 2 miles north of Bakersfield. We got to the shack, finished the wine, and went to sleep.
Both of you?
Mm-hmm. And that's where the funny part comes in. I guess I killed Davis, all right. But I didn't mean it. Oh, brother, get a whiff of that, huh? Why do these monks have to mop up while people are eating?
They'll be through in a minute, Henry.
Fine.
How'd you mean, Henry, you didn't mean to kill him? You already told us you had the idea.
Well, sure I had the idea. Let me explain, huh? We both went to sleep in the shack, Davis and me. Guess that must have been about 9 o'clock at night. I don't know what it was. Maybe the wine, I guess, but I start having nightmares.
Hmm?
Yeah, now maybe this part sounds like a story, but it's the truth. I had all these dreams. I woke up, but they're still there.
What was that?
Faces.
faces. That's all I could see. It's full of faces. Like, I guess I was really still asleep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I picked up a 2x4 and started swinging at them, their faces. Funny thing, too, I knew every one of these faces.
How do you mean?
People I killed. There are only a dozen of them, really, but it seemed like there were 100 of them all around in the air. Well, I grabbed that 2x4 and I started swinging. I was cold and sweating all at the same time, and I kept on swinging. And I saw Davis's face, and I swung hard and kept swinging. Didn't he make a sound? His eyes closed, kept on swinging at his head. Well, I come to, there he was, lying on the floor. Seemed to take those other faces away. They didn't bother me after I killed Davis.
What'd you do with him, Henry?
Oh, pulled him outside the shack, dug a hole and buried him. Burned his clothes, took his car and money and drove off. I'll show you, if you like, where I buried him, I mean.
How about these other men, Ross? These faces you saw?
Hmm? Oh. What if I get a little more coffee? Huh? It's all gone.
I'll get it.
You?
No, thanks. None for me. What about it, Ross, the other men?
Well, I don't recall them too well. It's what you said in the office, 10 or 12 of them, a couple in Sacramento, the others down through the valley. Like I say, there was no big reason for killing them. It just happened that way, that's all.
What'd you do with them, you remember?
Generally, yeah. There's one of them that stands out. Guy by the name of Slattery, some kind of salesman, a real crybaby.
Where'd this happen?
No, he picked me up in his car outside of Chowchilla. It's nighttime. He must be feeling pretty good. I made him stop on a side road. I hit him with a piece of angle iron. He cried like a baby. Buried him in a field, there he is. One of the faces that I saw. That's funny, huh? It shows you how psychology works, huh?
Yeah, what'd you do with his car, Slattery's, I mean?
Drove it down to Mexico and sold it there. I guess that's what I should have done with Davis's gun.
Oh, here you go.
Oh, thanks.
These killings of yours, you got any more you want to tell us about?
Well, I told you already. 10 or 12 of them. They're pretty much the same.
When was the first one?
Oh, maybe 18 months, 2 years ago. The first one wasn't any harder than the last. It's just like I was telling you before.
Yeah.
Everybody builds up murder. It's supposed to be a big thing, hard to do, all those phony stories. I'd just hit a guy a couple of times or something. That'd be it, a real small thing. Didn't change me any. That's why I say it's all built up.
You ever been treated for any mental sickness, Ross?
No, why?
You ever been examined by a psychiatrist?
No.
After you killed these men, did it bother you at all?
I'm just that wondering. The time I was with Davis. That's about it. Sure, good meal, Sergeant. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. You ready, Ben?
Let's go.
We go back upstairs, huh?
Yeah. You want to give us a statement?
All right. I had an idea you'd find me. I guess I always knew that you'd find me.
Well, let's go, Henry.
Guess I proved my point anyway, huh? It's all build-up. Huh? Murder. Killing somebody. Those phony stories. It's all build-up. It's cheap.
No, you got it wrong, Henry.
Huh?
Wait till they read you the bill.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On January 7th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 86, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
Now, here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, the makers of Fatima have done everything possible to produce the kind of cigarette you want, just as we on Dragnet try to bring you the kind of entertainment you want. In my honest opinion, Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes. But frankly, my opinion doesn't count because Fatimas must please you. That's why I suggest you buy a pack of Fatimas tomorrow, so you can prove to yourself that Fatimas are extra mild, with a rich, better flavor and aroma. You'll find Fatima now costs the same as other long cigarettes. And I'm convinced that you'll discover what I did. In Fatima, the difference is quality.
Henry Ellsworth Ross was tried and found guilty on 2 counts of murder in the first degree and received the death sentence. While he indicated that he had murdered the other 10 men, he refused to give any further information regarding the killings or what he had done with the bodies. Ross was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the State Penitentiary, San Quentin, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police, W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet portions transcribed from Los Angeles.
Now more excitement with Counter Spy on NBC.
let's drop in for a few minutes with Bob and Ray.
Questions again from the folks here in the studio with us. Questions about the Bob and Ray show.
I have one.
I think also that it would be nice that...
have a question.
We recognize you, so go ahead.
My name is Ray Goulding. So that's a coincidence.
No, come on.
It is.
We want your right name.
That's my right name.
And we want your affiliation. For instance, if we call upon you, sir, you would stand up and say, I'm Frank McGee, NBC News.
I'm Ray Goulding, Finley Quality Network.
Now...
And I just wanted to know, can I leave before the broadcast is over, or are we locked in?
We're not locking the studio. The only thing is that we would ask that you stay until the program is over.
Out of courtesy, huh?
Right, if you would. Okay, if not...
You can sit down, sir. Right, let me see if I can do any better with someone. You told me, sir, you had an interesting question before we went on the air. Would you stand, identify yourself, your affiliation, and then give us the question?
Frank McGee, NBC News, New York. I'd like to ask this question. Is Mary Magoon... really like the way she acts on the show? In other words, is she really like that in real life?
I don't know how you could possibly think that she isn't. All of our staff, of course, is just like a big family, Frank.
There's no sham attached to any of these wonderful people.
She's just as sweet and has the same quick smile and generosity that she displays on the air, off the air. If you met her... down in the lobby or, well, anywhere in a restaurant, she would be as warm and vivacious as she appears here on our show.
I think, Bob, also, this would be of interest to you, Frank, that she is a wonderful conversationalist. She has a fund of knowledge, and she's witty about it. You could talk to Mary for hours and hours, and let me assure you, never be bored.
There's nothing phony about her. There's no false veneer that she puts forth just for radio.
Plenty of heartache in her life and has gone on the air with serious problems, and yet nobody has ever known it.
No, I can never remember saying a harsh word to anybody or raising her voice, as a matter
of fact. Never. Bob and myself, yes, we have from time to time blown up on the air.
But as far as Mary Magoon goes, well...
There is nothing F-O-N-Y, phony.
P-H-O-N-Y.
About Mary.
Do we have that tape, John? Just to prove this, we didn't have time to do it ourselves, but I think Webley Webster made a tape in the lounge before we went on.
I'm all set to play the tape that shows how Mary is as sweet and as
really
even tempered as you gentlemen say.
And she didn't know this was being recorded, right?
She did not. It was taped this morning.
Good. Well, would you play that, please, for us?
Hello?
What?
Hello?
What's the matter, Mary?
It's the third time I've asked you to get your overtime slip.
Well, you don't have to yell at me for it. I'll get the overtime slip.
Well, if you'd listen the first time around,
the first time around, and so does everybody else around here.
I'm sick and tired of you using the phone here for private business.
Why don't the two of you dry up? Quiet, Pex.
Quiet, will you, gang? I'm trying to read here.
I've got a
dry up, Webster. You're a pest. You're old. Get out. Everybody out. Stay out. Come back tomorrow.
We couldn't hear that tape here in the studio, but I'm sure it does answer your question, Frank.
Why don't you come back afterwards, Frank, and we'll play it for you.
Now it's time for Dennis Day, and Dennis runs for mayor from September 3rd, 1947.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Day. Dennis Day is brought to you by Colgate Dental Cream and Luster Cream Shampoo. Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. Luster Cream, the cream shampoo for true hair loveliness. The Dennis Day Show with Barbara Heiler, B. Benadera, Dink Trout, John Brown, Charles Dant and the Orchestra, and yours truly, Vern Smith, is written by Frank Galen and stars our popular young singer in A Day in the Life of Dennis Day. Here's Dennis to sing The Old Chaperone.
A handsome young man met a pretty young maid andando en Barcelona. Andando means walking, and he had an old chaperone, a crone. Yes, she had an old chaperone. Maria, the girl, noticed Pedro, the boy, a winking right there in the calle. Na calle, mi street, and no one can make love in the street with an old chaperone, a crone. No, not with an old chaperone. The old chaperone was her tía, and tía means auntie in Spain. She may have an aunt to Maria, but to Pedro she was a big pain. So Pedro just smiled at Maria the maid, as the aunties they sparkle and show home. The aunties means teeth, and that's just where he'd like to have kicked the old chaperone, the crone, the bothersome old chaperone. Why don't you go away, said the old chaperone, you're fluttering like a paloma. Now paloma's a bird, and that's just what he gave her. And then he cried in an anguished tone, I hate you, you old chaperone. And then came the day of fiesta.
Fiesta!
Fiesta! The people all roared.
Olé!
It sounded so much like siesta. The auntie just stayed home and snored. While auntie was dreaming, the lovers were beaming. They danced and they sang in the plaza. Now plaza means square, but nobody there was as square as the old chaperone. For she left the two lovers alone. They respectfully thanked the old crone. They said, gracias, old chaperone, olé!
A very special tip on Harrafield girls from famous beauty authority Kay Dumont. Lovely hair shining with natural highlights and shadows, sparkling with silken softness, inviting with clean fragrance. That's the natural hair appeal that men prefer. And now such natural hair appeal can be yours with one touch of magic, Luster Cream Shampoo. Not a soap, not a liquid, Luster Cream Shampoo is an amazing new dainty cream that whips up like magic in hard or soft water into a mild, gentle lather that sweeps dullness away. Out of her wealth of cosmetic lore, Kay Dumont blended gentle lanolin with special secret ingredients to achieve this delightful new cream that leaves your hair so easy to manage, so soft and shining with the natural appeal that men love. Ask for the economical dollar jar of Luster Cream Shampoo at your cosmetic counter, also 30-cent and 55-cent sizes. Discover the secret that women and girls of all ages are learning everywhere. There's a world of glamour in each dainty jar of Luster Cream, the cream shampoo for true hair loveliness. Well, it's breakfast time as we look in now at the Anderson Boarding House in Weaverville, where our young hero, Dennis Day, rooms. So far, Mr. and Mrs. Anderson are the only ones at the table, and, as usual, Mrs. Anderson is laying down the law to her cuter half in no uncertain terms.
Something's got to be done, Herbert. Do you understand me?
Yes, Snuggle Bunny.
Mildred's almost 22 years old. She should have been married long ago, like every other girl in this town.
But she's practically engaged, Pupsy. And I'm sure that the very day Dennis is making enough money to support a wife...
Dennis! Yes, I can picture it now. How happy Mildred will be as they wheel her to the altar.
Now, it may not take as long as you think. Didn't Mr. Willoughby promise to give Dennis a raise as soon as he becomes a help in the business?
Exactly. You see how hopeless it is?
Well, the boy just hasn't found himself, that's all, Pupsy. Well, now, it's the truth. Maybe if we stopped criticizing him and helped him plan his future, he'd...
Morning, Mrs. Anderson. Mr. Anderson, is something wrong? You look kind of depressed.
We were discussing you.
Oh, I see.
Dennis, my boy, have you ever tried to find yourself?
Why, no, sir. I always know where I am.
I was referring to your future, son.
My future?
You may as well know right now that we don't like long engagements in this family, Dennis. If you and Mildred want to be married in the near future, it's up to you to make something of yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Can you suggest something I could make?
No, I can't think of a single thing.
We're just trying to put you on the right track, my boy. You've got confidence in yourself, haven't you?
No, sir.
Well, at least you can go to your boss and tell him that you've got to have a chance for advancement, or else, can't you?
No, sir.
Dennis, where's your courage?
Same place as my confidence.
Oh, it's hopeless, Herbert, hopeless. Come along.
Now, wait, dear.
Wait, nothing. There are some men in this world who are really men, who can do a man's job. There are others who are incapable of it.
But, dear...
I said, come along, Herbert. You still have the upstairs to clean and the ironing to do.
Very well, Lotus Leaf.
Morning, Mother. Daddy.
Good morning, Mildred. Dear. Come along, Herbert.
Were you and the folks having a talk, Dennis?
Yeah. Your mother has finally come to the conclusion that I couldn't possibly be a success at anything I tried.
Why, where on earth did she get such a crazy idea?
I think it was from observing me constantly at close range.
Well, of all the nonsense. Don't you believe it, Dennis? They've said things like that about all great men.
Honest?
Of course. They said Thomas Edison would never amount to anything, didn't they? Then one day he invented the electric light. You can do the same thing.
Wouldn't it be kind of silly when you can buy them so cheap?
That isn't what I mean. All you need is a little nerve. Like going to your boss, Mr. Willoughby, and telling him off good.
Oh, golly, Mildred,
Dennis, if you don't find the courage to do it this very day, I'll never speak to you again.
Mildred, you don't mean that.
I certainly do.
Well, I'll try. But don't be surprised if I come home tonight and hand you a book on sign language.
Dennis, is that... Why, John McNulty. How are you, John?
Oh, pretty good, Willoughby.
What are you doing down here, John? I thought you'd be up at the state capitol, getting your party's election campaign started.
Well, the race for mayor in this town looks a little tricky this year, Willoughby, so I came down to take charge. Our boy, Honest Jim, wants to be reelected, you know. He's still making payments on his yacht.
John, how do you explain to the voters that the mayor can buy a $20,000 yacht on an $800 a year salary?
We tell him he's very thrifty.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah. But you see, there's two strong parties this year. The Free Independent Citizens Liberty Party. That's us crooks. And the Reform Party.
Uh-huh.
The Reform Party's come out for lower taxes, better roads, higher pay for teachers, that sort of thing.
Radicals, huh?
Yeah. Our boy, Honest Jim, may have a little trouble this year. Personally, I'd like to chuck the whole thing up and retire to my toll bridge. But it's for the good of the party.
Well, you might be able to beat the Reform Party if you could split their vote.
Split their vote? How?
By running an independent candidate. A dummy. He'll take votes away from the Reform Party, and Honest Jim will walk in on your machine vote.
Say, that's great! Now, but where could we find a guy stupid enough to run for us? Fella... Fella dopey enough to think he has a chance. A man so innocent that we can twist him around...
Morning, Mr. Willoughby.
Hey.
Short search, wasn't it?
I beg your pardon, gentlemen?
No, it's no good, Willoughby. I'm afraid he won't do.
Oh, now, wait. You said you needed a man with certain qualifications. Well, Dennis
here... That's obvious, but there's a point where even the voters will draw the line.
I beg your pardon, gentlemen?
He could be built up with publicity, couldn't he?
Well, anything's possible, of course.
I guess two's company and three's a crowd. Goodbye.
Dennis, come back here. Now listen, my boy. I've always told you you could go somewhere, haven't I?
Well, never in such a quiet voice before.
Well, my boy, I've got a proposition that's going to floor you. How would you like to be the mayor of Weaverville?
Mr. Willoughby, have you been browsing around among the medicinal alcohol again?
Dennis, I'm serious.
Quick, how many fingers am I holding up?
No, stop that. McNulty, your troubles are over.
This is your candidate for mayor right here.
I think you're right, Willoughby.
Gosh, they're both loaded.
Now, let's look at this boy and see what he's got for politics.
Well, he's a war veteran, honest as the day is long, not a black mark on his record.
That doesn't mean a thing, Willoughby.
He sings and plays the banjo.
Now we're getting somewhere. My boy, go home and put on your best suit. You're calling on Senator Tom Harrington down at the hotel.
Senator Harrington? But doesn't he usually support the Reform Party candidate?
Well, that's just it. If we can get him to endorse Dennis this time, we've started the split.
But if we want him to endorse Dennis, isn't it dangerous to let him see Dennis?
All Dennis has to do is agree with everything the senator says. The senator will love him.
I see. All right, Dennis, get going.
Gee, you're serious about this, then? You really want me to run for mayor?
Of course we do, my boy.
Gosh, Mr. Willoughby, this is the happiest day of my whole life. And if I'm elected, I promise you'll never regret it. I promise I'll make Weaverville a town to be proud of. I promise I'll... Gee, isn't it wonderful? I sound like a candidate already. Mildred!
Why, Dennis, what are you doing home so early?
Oh, Mildred, I got the most wonderful news. Remember how your mother said there was absolutely nothing I was equipped to do?
So?
So I've decided to become a politician.
A politician?
Yeah, I'm running for mayor.
Mayor? Dennis, have you gone crazy? How could you possibly...
Dennis!
Oh, so you don't believe me, Mildred? Well, here's my campaign manager, Mr. Willoughby.
Dennis, you didn't take that seriously about running for mayor, did you? Don't you know who that man was in my store? Boss McNulty.
Boss McNulty? Why, he's the crookedest politician in the state.
Sure. I thought up that scheme to run those thieves out of town.
Huh?
McNulty doesn't want you to become mayor, Dennis. He's got his own candidate. Honest Jim Doan.
Well, that's a fine thing. And I was supposed to see this Senator Harrington this afternoon and get his endorsement. Well, I won't go.
Oh, yes, you will.
We've changed my mind.
I don't get it either.
Don't you see? If Dennis insults this senator and ridicules all his policies, he'll come out for the Reform candidate, the man McNulty's really afraid of.
Gosh, Mildred, I gotta hand it to you. That head of yours is so heavy with brains, it's a wonder you can keep your neck up.
Thank you, Dennis.
Mildred's right, Dennis. McNulty is beaten if you can get the senator really mad at you. You think you can?
Are you kidding? People get mad at me when I'm not trying. When I am, I'll be sheer murder.
Dennis Day, did you say the name was?
That's right, Senator. Candidate for mayor on the independent ticket.
Ah, I see. Question of endorsement. Well, frankly, Day, I lean a little toward the Reform Party.
Good, I'll give you a push.
You mean you don't want my endorsement?
I got enough handicaps now, pal. Look at your policies.
What about my policies?
What about them? Fair.
Oh, just a minute. Haven't I taken a firm stand on the slum problem, on the various...
The slum problem? What have you done about it? You've been in office 6 years and you haven't put up a single slum.
Now, see here.
Then aren't you the author of a bill to help juvenile delinquency?
I am.
How about that? Don't you think it's growing fast enough without any help from you?
Now, you listen here.
Policies. Bad.
Is that all? Are you through?
It all depends. What do you think of me?
Well, you're certainly outspoken. As a matter of fact, I rather like you.
Then I'm not through.
You're not?
No. For instance, you say you always fight for minority groups.
I do?
I'm laughing.
I defy you to name one minority group I haven't fought for.
Millionaires!
Millionaires?
And then you have the nerve to come out in favor of crime prevention. Why, you ought to be ashamed.
Being in favor of crime prevention is bad?
You know what a thing like that can lead to, don't you?
What?
Unemployed policemen.
Oh, stop!
Had enough? Do you hate me?
Well, no, of course not.
Then you haven't had enough.
Enough?
what?
Oh, so now you're getting nosy, asking questions. The big senator. How many subcommittees are you on?
Why, five or six.
Five or six? One senator? No wonder we have more subcommittees than we have subs.
See, that's very funny.
Oh, it was nothing, really.
Oh, you have a capital sense of humor. And to think that at first I thought you were serious.
We couldn't return to that mood, huh?
My boy, you certainly have a novel approach. Why, you've got the Reform Party candidate lashed to the mast. I'll be proud to endorse you for mayor.
But Senator, you don't understand. I hate you. I hate your policies. Get mad, Senator.
By Jove, you're a card. And I think you'll make a darn good mayor, too. Goodbye, my boy.
No, Senator, no.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Good gosh, now what have I done? That's what I get for being tricky. Why didn't I just act normal and let him feel for me what came naturally?
But I keep telling you I don't know where Mr. Day is.
Look, lady, we go to press in an hour and I want an interview.
But it's ridiculous. Mr. Day isn't running for mayor.
Don't kid me. We got the tip right from John McNulty.
I can't help what, Miss... Oh, Dennis, at last, tell this man you're not running for mayor.
I can't.
What?
We've got some pretty peculiar men running this country, Mildred. The senator likes me.
Dennis, come into the den. Excuse us a minute, please, mister. Now, what is all this?
Well, it's just like I said. The senator's going to endorse me. I came up with all kinds of silly ideas, but they had no effect.
But how could a man like the senator fail to recognize silly ideas when he heard them?
I don't know. I guess he's been in Washington too long.
Oh, Dennis, this is awful. That reporter wants a story from you, and once it's in the paper, you... Wait a minute.
You've got another idea, I can tell. That scared feeling is coming over me again.
Look, all you have to do is tell that reporter your platform.
Where does that get me?
Oh, right out of the race if you make it bad enough. Just tell him anything you can think of that's bad government. He'll print it, and that's the end of you for mayor.
Hey, maybe you're right. I'll get right to work on it. You wanted to see me, son?
Yeah, Mr. Day, I'm from the Bugle. I came for an interview. Can we have your platform for mayor?
You bet, son. First thing I'm going to do is open up the town.
I beg pardon?
I say this town's going to be wide open. Lotto, bingo, screeno, penny matching, all foul vices like that.
Well, you don't say.
Yep. Next, I promise to close all the schools. That ought to swing the kid vote my way 100%.
It's not bad. Of course, the kids can't vote.
Mere technical triviality.
I'm putting it down in your very own words here.
Fine.
Of course, I may ask you to initial it later. My editor thinks I drink.
Well, if you don't, you better learn how. Know what we're going to have in all the public drinking fountains when I'm mayor?
What?
Bourbon.
Bourbon in the drinking fountain.
Sure. A lot of our brave boys missed the lush war years, didn't they? Well, we're going to have a lush peacetime.
Hold the paper for me, will you? I'm starting to shake a little.
Glad to, son.
You know something, boy? You might be just screwy enough to get elected.
Don't say that.
Sure. Honest Jim and the reform candidates are, well, they're both dull as dishwater. With them cutting each other's throats, a screwball like you has a wonderful chance.
Gosh, your paper isn't going to support me, is it?
No, no. And that's another sign in your favor.
Huh?
Oh, sure. My paper has a perfect record. We came out against George Washington, and we've been hitting them that good ever since. Well,
Mildred, I need you.
I know. I heard.
What am I going to do? Every time I open my mouth, the votes pour in.
Dennis, I've made up my mind. There's only one solution.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Come on, then. Let's go.
Okay. Hey, wait a minute. What's the solution?
Why, we're going to win the election, silly. Oh, I'm sorry I didn't tell you, did I?
No, and I was kind of interested. Win the election? Me?
Certainly. The only one who can beat you is Mr. McNulty's candidate. Mr. McNulty pulled a dirty trick on you, didn't he? Well, we'll pull a dirtier one on him.
Atta girl. What do we do?
Suppose we manage to get a picture of Mr. McNulty threatening you with a gun in his hand.
With a gun in his hand?
Yes.
This is a dirty trick on Mr. McNulty?
Picture appears he'll be out of the race.
Suppose he decided to pull the trigger. It'll be a dead heat.
The gun will be empty, silly. You'll have it in your pocket. Then you'll pick a fight with him and let him take the gun away from you.
And then what?
I'll have that reporter outside the door with a camera. And as soon as we hear you say you wouldn't dare, we burst in and snap the picture.
Holy smoke, I wouldn't have your mind for anything. You wouldn't dare is the cue, huh?
Yes. We'll get Daddy's old revolver out of his drawer. Oh, we can't miss, Dennis, and you'll be the next mayor. Will you do it?
I suppose so. But you know something, Mildred? The only difference between my life and the perils of Pauline is that Pauline was all sure being around for the next episode.
Yeah, you're right, Jim. The kid's too strong with the press and the senator behind him. Yeah, let him be mayor for a year and hang himself. Next year, we'll be so strong, they'll never get us out. Okay, Jim, that's it then. We'll withdraw. Yeah. So long, Jim. Come in. Oh, hello, Day.
McNulty, I got news for you. I'm going out to win that election and make laughing stocks out of you and your stooge.
Oh? Well, more power to you, my boy. Good luck.
Oh, yeah? You and who else?
Didn't you hear me? I said, good luck, my boy.
Come outside and say that.
Dave, you gone crazy?
Oh, you want to fight, huh? Get your hands up in front of your face and keep them there. I'm going to hit you right in the stomach.
What's the matter with you? Didn't you hear what I said? I wished you all...
I heard what you said, you rat. Take that and that and that.
Take what?
I don't know, but that's what they always say. Didn't you hear me call you a rat? If a fella said that to me, I'd shoot him.
You would?
Yes, sirree. I'd take out my gun and shoot him.
Well, I don't have a gun.
Just so happens that I have.
What?
Here, why don't you grapple with me and take it away?
Don't be silly.
Go ahead. I grapple easy.
Put that thing down, Day.
Oh, come on, old man. Let's play the game.
Stop, will you?
I dare you to take it away from me. I double dare you. You wouldn't dare.
Hold it.
Hey, wait a minute. He's supposed to be holding the gun, not me.
Oh, Dennis.
Oh, boy, what a shot. Boy, candidate threatens rival political boss. Wow, thanks, pal.
Well, I didn't think you could lose this election, son, but it looks like you figured out a way.
Yeah, that's me. Lucky mornings and normal afternoons.
Oh, it wasn't your fault, Dennis.
Well, it looks like we've got a cinch now. Our boy, Honest Jim, will walk in.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'll fix him. He won't have a chance.
And just how do you intend to beat him?
He can't possibly win. I'm going out and campaign for him.
Dennis Day will be back in just a moment with a song, but first, here's a fact worth knowing.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth.
And just how important that is, our Colgate players are about to demonstrate. Scene, a picnic. But it's no picnic for our hero. Listen.
Jeepers, Janie. Every time I try to warm up to you lately, I get the cold shoulder. What gives anyway?
You mean you definitely don't know, Joe?
Oh, Janie, I haven't even got the makings of an idea.
That's the trouble with your trouble, Joe. Ask your dentist, won't you? Please.
And here's what Joe found out.
Scientific tests prove that in 7 out of 10 cases, Colgate Dental Cream instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. And Colgate's safe polishing agent brings out the natural sparkle of your teeth, cleans them thoroughly and safely.
Yes, Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth.
And Colgate Dental Cream is famous for its wonderful wake-up flavor, too. Nationwide tests of leading toothpastes prove that Colgate's is preferred for flavor over other brands tested.
So to clean your teeth thoroughly and safely, for a wake-up flavor everyone enjoys, use Colgate Dental Cream. Remember, Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. With Charles Dant in the orchestra, here's Dennis to sing That's My Desire.
Spend
spend one night with you. In our old rendezvous and reminisce with you. And dance till break of day. That's my desire. We'll sip a little glass of wine. I'll gaze into your eyes divine. I'll feel the touch of your lips pressing on mine. To hear you whisper low, just when it's time to go.
Tune in to another Dennis Day Show brought to you by Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth, and Lustre the cream shampoo for true hair loveliness.
Remember, doctors prove the Palmolive plan brings 2 out of 3 women lovelier complexions in 14 days. And this beauty plan with Palmolive soap was tested on women with all types of skin, dry, oily, even skin that was not clear. Yes, 36 doctors proved the 14-day Palmolive plan improves all types of skin, brings fresher, brighter, younger-looking complexions. So get Palmolive soap and start your 14-day Palmolive plan now.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.